I speak to you in the name of God. Amen. Martin Luther was wrong. I think Martin Luther was wrong. Not wrong in unlocking the windows of the church and letting the breeze rustle the neat stacks of tradition. Not wrong in translating the Bible into German so that people could read it for themselves. Not wrong in reminding us that the reach of salvation stretches from God to us and not the other way around. But Martin Luther was wrong in his estimate of the letter of James. He called it an epistle of straw. And you can understand why. Like a pesky mosquito buzzing in our ears, James refuses to let us pretend that we can love God just by smiling and being nice. Over and over, this letter says, do your faith, don't just have it. Do your faith, don't just have it. If we don't act our faith, then we cannot really have faith. Luther heard only work, 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 work. And through his faith-scarred ears, he could only hear a message that seemed subversive to the gospel of Christ. But Martin Luther was wrong. James is not an epistle of straw. It is a letter of godly wisdom that speaks the truth without a muffler. If this short book were missing from our Bible, and we never heard it read in our worship, we would never know that showing partiality is a sin. We hear a lot about sin, most of it in shades that only have to do with sex. But around the church today, people are gathering to celebrate the Eucharist in Buffalo, New York, San Francisco, Dallas, Atlanta, Des Moines, Iowa, Nashville, and Temple Terrace. People are making their way to their churches to be nourished by the Bible and the prayers, to be fed at the Lord's table, and to be strengthened to serve their communities, to do real religion, according to James, to serve the widows and orphans, the hungry and the homeless, the lonely and the oppressed in their towns and cities. And in every place, the people will hear a message about sin today, but it will have nothing to do with sex. It will have to do with judgment, with judging others and showing partiality to the rich over the poor. And the gospel they will hear, the message they will hear, all those Episcopalians and other Christians all over America today, is that mercy triumphs over judgment. Just hear that blessed phrase and let it sink in. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Hear it again and remember the moments in your own life when you teetered near the edge of shame and remorse. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Once more, let that promise shred your righteous shell and quickly cover all your sin. Mercy triumphs over judgment. It is no different than saying, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. Mercy triumphs over judgment. It is the same as the people's response to Jesus' gracious healing of the deaf man. He has done everything well. He has even made the makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak. Mercy triumphs over judgment. James must have been part of a church like St. Catherine's. It's not that we're terrible or deliberately inhospitable, but each one of us has shown partiality sometime. Even in this holy place, where people of all sorts and conditions sit and pray, we have shown partiality to some and preferred some to others. Substitute any other quality for gold rings, fine clothes, or dirty clothes, and it's hard to escape the judgment of James. Let me tell you what happens when judgment triumphs over mercy. Kate Young was only 6 years old when her father became very ill. He was hospitalized for several weeks, and during that time, Kate's mother took a job as a waitress, serving dinner to fancy tourists in their small New Hampshire town. Listen to Kate's own recollection of what happened. The problem was this. My mother was serving alcohol, and though she didn't drink herself, that wasn't the point. When my father got out of the hospital, a meeting was called. My parents sat in their usual pew. A vote of the congregation was taken, hands raised in vote all around them. The numbers were clear. June Young had broken the covenant, and she had to leave. And my father walked out the door with her. Although Kate's mother and father had been disfellowshipped by the First Church of God in Moultonboro, New Hampshire, they continued taking Kate and her brothers to Sunday school. They wanted their children to know God's mercy. Then one morning, my teacher told the class that my mother was a bad woman. She used her as an example of sin for our lesson that day. I remember asking my mother, "What does hypocrite mean?" She couldn't find a way to answer. I started to cry. She set her jaw. That was the last time we went. When judgment triumphed over mercy, Kate Young's world was filled with pain. But she must have stumbled across the letter of James at some point, and she must have read this passage and shuddered when she read that if you show partiality, you commit sin. Kate grew older and discovered that her older brother Peter was different from other boys. He was gay. Kate grew older. She married and became Kate Cayley. She settled in the Ashmont district of Boston with her new husband. For years, she trailed behind her the rusty and painful shackles of the judgment that cast her family out of the church. Until one day, Kate and her husband realized that they needed to find a place where they could find out more about God. Their search led them to All Saints Episcopal Church in Ashmont, and they found a place where mercy triumphs over judgment. I know that parish. It's in a rundown, diverse, distressed part of Boston, a wonderful parish. For a small girl from a small town in New Hampshire Church of God, All Saints was a far universe with its incense, boy choristers, intricate liturgical drama, glorious music, and magnificent words of the prayer book. And when Kate and her husband got up from their pew and walked to the altar to receive Holy Communion, they walked in the company of rough guys more attuned to the bar across the street, a stately and coiffed woman in a Chanel suit and coordinated hat, a fragile Vietnamese man in a torn shirt, a young West Indian woman leading old West Indian women. All of them and each of them reached the altar and stood before God's grace. As luck would have it, Kate Cayley became a writer. And when she got around to writing about her experience of God's mercy, she called it The House Where the Hardest Things Happened, a memoir about belonging. It is a book that will make you believe that mercy really does triumph over judgment. Toward the end of the book, Kate allows for the mystery of that mercy and admits her still tentative longing to live within it. And I go to All Saints because it doesn't matter if I'm good or if I'm not good. If you break the rules, you get to try again. I go because at my church it is not about the individual pastor or priest or prophet. It is about some words that have been around a long time. And I like words. I like stories. Especially a story that isn't always clear, that has a contradiction or two. Just like me. I love the Bible. I'm not one to toss it aside as outdated or mistranslated. I need and count on the fact that it's an ancient mixture of what is most human and most holy. Martin Luther was wrong. James, the letter of James, has to stay in the Bible. For without it, we might not ever know that showing partiality is committing sin. Even more important than that, if the letter of James were not in our Bible, we might never hear so clearly that mercy triumphs over judgment. I assure you, I'm glad to hear that. I expect you are too. Amen.